It may seem cliche, but if you don't like jogging, you don't like brisk walking, you don't like lifting weights, that's okay.
Hi, I am Alok, and I'm your host at Fitterobic. Welcome to Fitness Pro Chat, the podcast by Fitterobic.
Welcome to Fitness Pro Chat by Fitterobic. If you're looking to improve your health and well-being to lead a healthy, fit, and fulfilling life, whether you're an amateur or a professional athlete, this podcast is for you.
Today, chronic diseases such as heart disease and obesity are leading cause of death and disability. In our episode today, we will discuss how to treat chronic diseases with lifestyle medicine. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. Today, I'm joined by Molly Dwivedi for Fitness Pro Chat with Pitero. Molly is a lifestyle medicine PA and practices medicine. She is also the founder and owner of SEM, that is Sleep, Eat, and Move Mindfully. Welcome to the show, Molly.
Thank you, Alok. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here with you all.
Thank you for joining, Molly. Let me start with the first question. Beyond physical benefits, most of us talk about exercising has positive impact on our physical well-being and also on our mental well-being. So it would be great to understand from you, how does exercise affect not only, say, the physical aspect, but also on the mental and emotional aspect, especially for people who are living with chronic diseases?
Yes, absolutely. This is a great question. And I'd love to explore a few different facets of this question here, if I may. So the physical benefits that you alluded to are immense, and most people are aware of those benefits. But to review in broad strokes, I'm going to focus on adults here today because that's the population that I treat. But we see lower risk of heart disease, diabetes, certain cancers, dementia, and weight gain. And in older adults, we also see that exercise helps with falls and preventing injuries from falls. And then we see improved management of conditions that people already have. So improved management of heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, even pain from osteoarthritis when people are exercising. And importantly, we see delayed death from heart disease and some cancers and delayed death from all causes. That's probably not news to most people. But I really like to focus on the benefits that we feel on a day-to-day basis. And this gets back to kind of, you know, the mental health and emotional health and well-being benefits of exercise, because that boost in function, the boost in energy and mood that we feel from exercise is often a more powerful motivator for people to move than I'm exercising to reduce my risk of heart attack in 20 to 30 years, right? So what are those benefits? I'll get to the question of individuals with chronic disease, but just starting with the general population, the research shows us that with exercise, we have improved quality of life, and it doesn't get much better than that, right? That's a pretty good indicator. We also see improved sleep quality and a decrease in daytime sleepiness when people are exercising. See improved cognitive function even after one bout of exercise. So that's pretty impressive. We also see lower risk of anxiety and depression when people are exercising. And to your question of the effects of exercise for people that have chronic diseases, I want to take a minute to highlight here that lifestyle interventions such as exercise are elements of effective treatment plans for chronic disease, sometimes in conjunction with conventional medications. So when we're in medical office visits, diet and exercise are often briefly mentioned as a quick first sentence when we're talking about, you know, things that should be worked on. But then we spend a lot of time talking about the medications that are being prescribed.
Yeah.
And while I'm glad that we at least bring up diet and exercise in these visits, the power of the nutrition and exercise and other lifestyle interventions is really lost in those conversations. I think a lot of people have experienced that at some point or another. And conventional treatments are important, don't get me wrong, but appropriately dosed lifestyle interventions are often an equally important element of the treatment plan for the long-term management of these chronic conditions. So I really wanted to just kind of highlight that exercise isn't kind of a side thought. It's, I think of it as medicine, as part of the treatment plan. So this is what this movement for lifestyle interventions is all about. So circling kind of back to your question, you know, what does the research say about chronic disease
and exercise and the mental and emotional health benefit.
This is really important because when people have chronic conditions, we actually have an increased risk of having mental health conditions. And it turns out that exercise is a treatment for both. It's a treatment for the chronic condition and for the mental health element. We see that exercise improves symptoms of anxiety and depression. And we see that exercise improves sleep when people have insomnia, improves quality of life when people have schizophrenia, and it may also help with decreasing alcohol consumption for when people have alcohol use disorder.
I have a follow-up question on this. So does tailoring exercise programs for different chronic diseases also work? Absolutely. Yes.
Yes, definitely. So with regards to tailoring exercise programs for specific health conditions, I really want to give a shout out to my exercise specialist and physical therapy colleagues because they are truly the experts in exercise personalization. So for example, if somebody has neuropathy in their feet, we want to take their balance into consideration. A newer condition that is emerging right now is long COVID. I'm an advocate for the recognition and management of this condition. People with long COVID often experience debilitating fatigue from exercise. So this is one condition, unlike most other chronic conditions, where more exercise isn't better and actually exercise can be harmful. So that's a really good example of a condition where we do have to tailor exercise for that condition and for that specific individual. And in my work, how I personalize care is through a slightly different lens. And so that is through practicing patient-centered care. And that really means where we put the patient at the center of their medical care, not the insurance company, not the health system, and not my preferences, but really the patient at the center of their health care. And I do that by understanding two different categories of information about each of my patients. So the first, what medical condition does the patient have? How does it affect them? And what does the research tell us about options for successfully managing that condition?
Sure.
And the second category of information is what are the patient's values? What are their priorities? What are their goals and social determinants of health? And my job as a medical provider is to empower patients by helping them first understand their medical conditions, but second and most importantly, use their strengths to address and manage these conditions. So kind of an example of what this looks like in practice. After going through and understanding a patient's health history, I'll often summarize the elements of lifestyle change that I think can be helpful for improving their health and function. So whether that's working on stress management or working on sleep or working on exercise. But before we dive in and actually co-create a specific lifestyle prescription for that patient, my next question is really, what do you want to work on? Because I operate from the understanding that patients are experts in their own lives. Although I have insight about their health conditions and what the research tells us about managing them, really patients are the experts in what they feel that they need, and we're most likely to be successful in working on things that feel important and pertinent to us. So we spend a bulk of the time personalizing their care based on what patients are most interested and able to work on. I can give some ideas and inspiration, but patients are in the driver's seat and I cheer them on from the passenger seat. So that's kind of how personalization and tailoring looks like for me.
So, and then you talked about patients are in the driver's seat, and when someone is diagnosed with a chronic disease, some kind of fear that creeps in on what would happen next. And so that's probably an area of concern which requires interventions from professionals like you to address and help them to come out of that fear and embrace exercise. So how do you deal with or how do you motivate the patients in these cases to come out of their fear and adopt exercise?
Absolutely. So you bring up a really important point that our self-talk is a really important element of behavior change. And so the first thing, I explore that a little bit. Let's ask and see kind of what's going on. What are the fears? Or is there negative self-talk? Often people say, I can't do this, or I've tried and I've failed. And so let's work with that. And that's a huge element of behavior change, is focusing on that piece. Health coaches are fantastic for this.
challenging these beliefs and really working through to increase our confidence that we are capable of making successful lifestyle changes, specifically with fear regarding exercise. That's also common. But it's important to keep in mind that exercise in some capacity, particularly light or moderate intensity physical activity, is safe and beneficial for most people without visiting a doctor first. And the American College of Sports Medicine has really addressed this question of exercise participation by providing health screening recommendations that can be conducted by exercise professionals in various settings. And so this also, you know, includes us as medical professionals. And I really like the framework that they've created. They have three main considerations. Number one, what is the patient's current level of physical activity? Number two, are there any signs or symptoms of certain diseases? And number three, what is the intensity of the planned exercise? And so I'm not going to get into kind of the specifics of these considerations here, but I want people to know that that framework exists and that we shouldn't be dissuading people from exercise, you know, out of fear, of course, barring, you know, certain symptoms and conditions. But with regards to musculoskeletal conditions, that's kind of a more common concern for physical activity. And this is where I'll give another shout out to my PT colleagues, because helping people understand their pain can help them exercise more safely. And many people with chronic pain develop something that is called kinesiophobia. And kinesiophobia is a fear of movement or physical activity, thinking that the movement will worsen their pain. But we find that kinesiophobia actually worsens chronic pain and quality of life for people. So physical therapists can be really helpful in, number one, treating the painful musculoskeletal condition that somebody may be having. And number two, helping people move in ways that doesn't flare their pain. And then also breaking that cycle of kinesiophobia and avoidance. So really, we can get people moving safely. And I would say physical therapists and exercise specialists are great resources if people have fears and want to become more active. Another thing that comes to mind with fear and avoidance is people who are more active and may experience a significant musculoskeletal injury can develop fear of re-injuring themselves. For a classic example of this is skiers and ACL injuries and things like that. Yeah. And there's actually sports psychologists who will work with people to overcome these fears to get back into participation of their sport.
Absolutely. I would say you provided a holistic picture of a role of each of the caregiver and stakeholders involved in this process to help and motivate someone who's suffering from or has been diagnosed with chronic disease. So it would be great to understand any latest research finding that demonstrates positive impact of exercise on patients. And in the past, there have been a lot of research that have been very well documented. So any latest research that you have come across, which you feel should be very good to share with the audience?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, we have tons and tons and tons of study that documents the benefits of exercise in chronic disease. I am really mostly interested in now disseminating exercise to the masses and disseminating interventions that are available to everybody and get more people moving. Those are really the types of studies that interest me the most, because we already know that exercise is good for us. Of course, we can always benefit from more data and refining that data, but I really am passionate about the dissemination of this work. And so one of the things that excites me is digital health interventions for things like physical activity. And Nudge Health is a program that I partner with in my practice. And they bring exercise interventions into the homes of the patients that they're working with. And we've really seen that people, by participating in this program, increase the number of days per week that they do intentional physical activity. And then we also see an increase in the minutes per days with this physical activity. Also see improved strength and balance and functional movements by objective measurements. And so those are the types of interventions that really excite me.
So it would be important to understand how exercise can be integrated into the management of chronic disease, especially in the clinical setting, how exactly it can be?
Yeah, so I think it's necessary that we do implement these evidence-based sustainable programs as preventative and treatment options. And ideally, they should be minimal or no cost to the patient to increase the amount of participation. And there are a couple of clinical models that I think are really promising for wide-scale implementation. And the first one that I want to highlight is one that I was just talking about, which is this fitness programming through Nudge Health. So Nudge Health is a virtual lifestyle medicine program. And in the program, patients first meet with a health coach and they receive a book that explains the program. And then they have a fitness assessment with a fitness specialist and they receive a customized strength and aerobic exercise prescription via a smartphone app. And in this app, they can communicate with their fitness specialist and the fitness specialist can monitor their progress with the program. And then throughout, they meet with their health coach as well every 2 weeks. And this goes on for about 16 weeks or so. And they meet with a fitness specialist once per month. And the beauty of this program is that it's all done from the comfort of the patient's home and the surroundings that they're comfortable and familiar with. It's also flexible and doesn't require added resources like gym memberships or transportation and such. So this program really leverages the expertise of the health coach to help understand the patient's goals, their values, assess their readiness for change and participation, and then also the expertise of the fitness professional, of course, to orient the patient to exercise and build their confidence so they can become self-sufficient with exercise for years, if not decades to come. And then a second model that I see is for working with people that get into physical therapy, kind of like we were talking about with physical therapy, for example. And they go through physical therapy, they improve their pain and they're able to move and exercise. But then they come back, you know, say to my office, for example, in a month, and they're still doing their PT exercises, but they're just not feeling confident enough to go to the gym and progress their routine. So in the absence of a medical problem, their insurance is not going to cover physical therapy or an exercise regimen, and nor is that really the best utilization of a physical therapist, for example. So the question is, you know, what do we do next? How do we get this person who's improved their pain moving more? And I see this very frequently. This happens all the time in the clinical setting. There's a program here at Valley Medical Center here in Washington that I think has really addressed this need. And they created a prescriptive exercise program called Lifestyle 365 that's right on their medical campus. And it's a pretty good-sized fitness facility. And the patient starts by meeting with an exercise physiologist who does a thorough assessment and creates a custom fitness program, also loaded onto a smartphone app. And then they have touch points with an exercise specialist throughout, and they can check back in with the exercise physiologist as they need. And now this is the coolest part, I think. The fitness app that has the exercise regimen is integrated into the TechnoGym exercise equipment on campus there. So the patient can sit down on a strength training machine and go. The machine will even show them what the appropriate range of motion is, for example. So the patient is really instructed to exercise in real time by the machine. It's pretty incredible.
Awesome. Absolutely. I mean, that's really amazing to know. I mean, the integration of technology and how it can enable a patient to exercise in real time. One of the things which it would be great to understand if you could talk about a few success stories of a few patients who have benefited through the Nudge program and the integration of technology that you just talked about.
Yeah, absolutely. So I worked with a gentleman who was treated for colorectal cancer at a pretty young age. And after completing treatment, he had some neuropathy in his hands and feet from the chemotherapy that was causing some pain. And he was really struggling to find his new norm after cancer diagnosis treatment. So in the lifestyle medicine program, he wanted to start by working on nutrition changes. And he really liked smoothies. So that's where we started. You know, we said, let's
start making some smoothies instead of having crackers and cheese for snacks, for example. So he started, you know, doing that and also eating some more whole plant foods, having carrots for snacks, for example. And so at our next visit, we recapped all of his success and encouraged his progress, and he was ready to start moving again. So got into physical therapy, worked on that a little bit to kind of address some of that neuropathy. And again, this is an example of doing things outside of physical therapy and how can we help bridge that gap. And what he wanted to do, this was an idea that he came up with between visits, is to use a seated cycle while he was playing video games. He loved to play video games, but he saw that as an opportunity to also be moving his body. Great, I'm continuing to do it. I would like to start walking some more. I really enjoy walking, you know, outdoors in my neighborhood. There's a nice walking path. And so he started doing that. And so after several weeks, we had improved the nutrition. We'd started reducing sedentary behavior. I think of sedentary behavior and physical activity as, you know, two separate things. But he made this chain reaction of changes. And I really love this type of story because I think it is more typical and realistic as opposed to making huge sweeping changes. And that's really important for people to keep in mind, is to start with something that feels good and then use that to set off the chain reaction of positive lifestyle changes after that as your confidence builds.
Absolutely. So another question that I have is more on, if you could also talk about some practical tips that people can implement to improve their, say, fitness levels, irrespective of whatever condition that they are diagnosed with, especially from chronic disease perspective.
Sure, sure. So the first thing, my first rule of exercise is do something that you love, no matter what it is.
Okay.
It may seem cliche, but if you don't like jogging, you don't like brisk walking, you don't like lifting weights, that's okay. There are so many different things that you can do for exercise, and it's important to identify what feels best to you. So if you need some inspiration, you can look online or you can ask your colleagues or neighbors what they do to stay active. And I think it's really great to find a new hobby in whatever sort of physical activity that you find that you enjoy. So you can do things like rent snowshoes. I'm from the Midwest, and so there's a lot of snow and cold weather up there. So finding ways to do things year round and make it a new hobby. And you can also, you know, rent a canoe if you like to be on the water instead. If you want something that's right from the comfort of your home, look up some yoga videos on YouTube. Those are all free. Or try to find some sort of movement that you enjoy doing. And then my close number two tip is to do your movement outdoors. I love pairing movement with the outdoors whenever possible, because that exposure to sunlight is really good for our circadian rhythm. We want to use sunscreen if we're going to be in direct sun exposure or some protective clothing, but really getting that daytime sunlight into our eyes is good for our sleep. And it also, we have some studies showing that being in nature improves some aspects of our physiology. So we see some cardiovascular benefits. We see some immune system benefits. So the more we can be outdoors, the better. And then the third tip that I like to provide people is to find a buddy. So that could be a pet.
Okay.
I personally like to exercise with my dog. Could be a neighbor or a friend, or it could be somebody that you check in with virtually. It can be a good system for accountability, but also for enjoying these activities more.
True. So someone who is interested to learn more about specific exercise programs, so would you have certain recommended resources that they can go to and find more about it?
Yes. So there are some wonderful programs out there that are rooted in research. And the first one that comes to mind is cardiac rehab. So that is for specific cardiovascular conditions. Insurance will pay for a cardiac rehab program. There are now some virtual cardiac rehabs programs popping up. Nudge Health has just recently launched a virtual cardiac rehab. So cardiac rehab is fantastic, rooted in tons of research. The next one that comes to mind is the diabetes prevention program. And those are often offered at YMCAs, for example. And those are great multi-component lifestyle change programs that involve nutrition and exercise and some other elements of lifestyle change. LiveStrong is also a YMCA program that is for people that have been affected by cancer. Another wonderful program. And the YMCA, this is not specifically for chronic conditions necessarily, but Silver Sneakers. Here in the States, they have gym memberships at a lower cost, and they are accessible to many people. So those are some of the top programs that kind of come to mind.
So I have last two questions for you for this episode. And one of the very important things, which I would say it would be great to understand about some of the exciting developments that you see, especially in the field of lifestyle medicine.
Yes. So the first is, you know, what I've talked about a couple of times, which is anything that increases the delivery of these services to the population at large. And we can see that in a couple of different facets. The first is the digital health and virtual interventions and things like that. Specifically, the ones that are covered by insurance. I'm very excited about those programs because we can get more people engaged, meet them where they're at. I also am a really big fan of the workplace health interventions. So what better place to have a culture of health than the place where, mm-hmm. you know, many people spend upwards of 40 hours a week? How can we integrate, Absolutely. How can we really integrate those healthy behaviors into our workplace and make the healthy choice the easy choice? So I'm really excited about workplace health interventions. And then the other is community-based interventions. And there's been a move towards getting programs into places of worship, for example, where leaders of congregation are helping bring the community together and making these changes, you know, all at once. As a group, it provides that group support element and social connection, which is wonderful. And so I'm really excited about getting lifestyle medicine and healthy habit change into various aspects of the culture and community, because I think that's how we are going to make big systemic change.
So that's great, Molly. One last question for today. Could you talk about top three recommendations that you'd have that would create or send a message of empowerment for people who are living with chronic diseases?
Absolutely. So it is never too late to make lifestyle changes, no matter what's going on. Now is always a good time to be working on any sort of lifestyle change, no matter how big or how small. But also it's important to remember that start by working on something that you're excited about and something that feels good to you. So for some people, that may be doing things like starting a meditation practice because they're feeling really stressed out. For some people, that may be starting an exercise program, which is wonderful. There's a lot of focus on things like nutrition and exercise, and that's because they're really effective interventions. But I don't want people to lose track of focusing on all of the other things. It's really hard to make nutrition changes if we're sleep deprived, for example. So focus on what feels best to you, whether that's finding or in connecting to your sense of purpose, whether that is spending time with community and spending time with people that you love. Those are all things that have been shown to have very meaningful effects on our health. So start with anything, no matter how small, and make sure it's something that you're excited about.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Molly, for your time today. And I would love to speak with you again pretty soon.
Absolutely.
That's a wrap. Thank you for listening to Fitness Pro Chat by Fit Aerobic. We hope you had key takeaways from today's episode and learned something new. Don't forget to download and subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. And leave us a rating and review on your favorite platform. In the meantime, reach out to us on Instagram at Fit Aerobic or through our website, fitaerobic.com. And remember, failures will only make you strong and better learn. Take care, stay healthy, and live a fulfilling life with Fit Aerobic.